Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold.
Hello and welcome to the Inside the Huddle podcast in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network, and I'm joined... We're not in a studio this week. We're in the NFL UK offices. We are nothing if not flexible, Jeff Reinbold.
Well, this is old school, man. This is throwback Tuesdays. We're back in the NFL offices. Feel good to be back here.
We've got a couple of phones going, and don't let us down. The phones are recording in front of us, so unable to get into a studio this week, but we are together in person again to take you through everything that happened in Week 14 in the NFL. We will look ahead to Week 15. We'll take your questions in the mailbag, and we'll pause and talk about some of the bigger subjects around the NFL. And Jeff, we'll start with Mike Pettine and the Cleveland Browns. Seems to be a week-to-week thing now. Pettine has said, and I'm sure by the time some people listen to this podcast, he will have made his decision on a starting quarterback. But he's now, he said it was substandard from Brian Hoyer. What did you see last week? And you know, we asked the question last week, should they go to Manziel? I mean, has it changed that much in a week?
No, but you know what? I'm sure Mike's going to do what's best for his football team. Mm. And you always weigh every decision that you make based on what's best for the football team, what's going to give you the best opportunity to win on Sunday. Mm. Now, if Hoyer, who in my opinion, as a coach watching the game, I saw a quarterback who was pressing, that was trying to make too fine of throws, was just playing like he had a short leash on him.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to hear what Cameron Jordan said about their offense. He said, "We sucked." That's a pretty strong negative statement by one of your own players. Obviously, I think it's getting real close to the time where they've got to say, "Hey, Hoyer just can't, the way he's playing right now, get us over the hump." What a heartbreaking loss for the Browns.
Well, I guess that you look at the first half against Buffalo, no offense, great defense, and then that game got away from them. Great defense all the way through the game against the Indianapolis Colts. The last drive, obviously, it was a drive too many for that defense to hold up. But do they need more help from the quarterback position? Would Johnny Manziel give them more help? Because I look and think about a couple of throws late on where Hoyer was under pressure. He had guys in his grill, and he delivered a couple of plays downfield. But then the negative of that is the interception in the end zone. You can't do that. He has the one late on, which goes through Josh Gordon's hands. Tough catch, but you sometimes see those pulled in. I don't know if Johnny tucking it and running, which I'm sure he'll do quite a bit of, being a rookie quarterback in the NFL, is the answer either.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. That's a really interesting question, series of questions, Neil. The first one,
I should ask him one at a time,
no,
really.
No, but the first one, you know, really, it's a good point. The interception in the end zone, when you're in scoring zone and he tried to force the ball. Now, obviously, there was some sort of malfunction in the receivers because they had two receivers right on top of one another. Mm. But he threw a ball where a ball didn't need to go. You could at least get three there. Your defense is playing real well. Yeah. That was a critical error. Any time that you're struggling, everything that goes negative for you gets compounded. You miss a field goal that was a makeable field goal. Well, that's not on the quarterback. That's on the kicker. But it gets put on the quarterback's plate because now he has to play better to get your team over the hump. Your star receiver drops a ball that he should catch. If you're a great, if you're a elite level receiver in the National Football League, you're going to catch that last pass, and that would have put him close to field goal position. Is that on the quarterback? No, it shouldn't be, but it goes back on him because, again, it magnifies all the throws that he missed over the course of the game. So, again, it's the pressure of not being quite good enough, and you have to feel – he's beginning to feel like – he plays like he's feeling like he has to make every throw, and that's a difficult place to be for a quarterback.
Maybe they feel they need to – spark. Maybe it's just we're not quite out of playoff contention, but – we almost are, but it does seem maybe the week to week thing though doesn't help, does it?
Well, it's hard to know because you're not in those meeting rooms, you're not in the classroom when you're not watching them prepare, all those other things. But I do know this, that when you're playing for your life, when you're playing for your playoff life, which is where Cleveland is right now as they go into Cincinnati this week, you're going to do everything in your power to give yourself the best possible chance to win the football game. And if you feel like, as a coaching staff, that it's to go with that rookie in that pressure environment, then you got to make that decision and just go with it. The worst thing you can do is hem and haw and not make a decision, because what football teams look for in these situations out of the head coach is leadership and a clear direction and a clear path.
And I guess if it becomes, you know, Johnny tucking it and running and scoring a touchdown here and there, and it's not your traditional quarterback play at this stage of the year, that's all right if you get a win, isn't it? I mean, look at what Tebow did for Denver a couple of years.
Yeah, and that's the bottom line. This is a performance-based industry. Mm. You have to perform. And what does performing mean in the National Football League? It means winning football games.
Yeah.
And for the Browns, who have done such an amazing job of improving their football team over the course of one season under Mike Pettine, this is now, you know, you're at the highest stakes. You're playing the games that are the biggest. You're playing to stay alive and to play one more week of meaningful football and then hopefully get into the playoffs. So, again, I would not be surprised to see Manziel, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Hoyer either. And I'm not waffling. I'm just saying I understand.
Fair,
I understand how Mike feels right now, and I've sat in that same chair.
Especially with those – it seemed that the indication, you know, coming out of the decision made last week and into the game against Indianapolis was that – Hoyer was what the veterans wanted. So now it's, have the veterans changed their mind that badly and that quickly? So that is all got to be weighed into it, hasn't
all it? All those things become factors. And I'm sure what Mike's doing is he's individually sounding out the leaders on his
the
football
team. The ones
he
needs to, not
it might be Joe Hayden. It might be
Joe Thomas or someone like that.
Some of the guys who've been around and understand and have the maturity to be able to sit down with him and say, Mike, this is where the locker room's at right now. This is how we feel. Mike Pettine's a smart guy. He's not going to make a rash decision either way he goes on this thing. But the bottom line is this: there are three phases in every football game. There's special teams, there's the offense, and there's defense. Well, you look at those three phases last week against Indianapolis. In my opinion, with the exception of the missed field goal, they won the special teams aspect, covered extremely well. Defensively, it was really a draw in a lot of ways, even though Cleveland, you know, might have the slight edge because they scored a couple of touchdowns on defense. But Indianapolis' defense played real well.
Yeah.
But where there was a glaring difference was offensively. When the Colts needed drives in the second half, Andrew Luck was able to give them to them. When the Brownies needed drives in the second half, Hoyer wasn't able to capitalize and make plays.
Can't ask Joe Thomas. He's tending his vegetable garden. Great feature that was. Marvin Lewis is sort of preparing for Johnny Manziel. He said this quote this week, Jeff: you've got to defend the offense. You can't defend the player, particularly a midget. And then he apologized very quickly afterwards. But he does. You didn't know I was going with that one. But he will present different problems, wouldn't he, if it was Johnny Manziel?
Yeah, it certainly would, because I've never played against a midget.
But you can't see him.
Doug Flutie was the smallest quarterback I think I've ever coached against.
He did all right, didn't he?
You know what? Marvin's right. You defend the offense, but the reality of it is they're two completely different people running the offense. Hoyer's not a guy that's going to scramble around and make plays with his feet particularly. Johnny Manziel provides that, you know, opportunity to keep plays alive and to make plays and get out of the pocket and do some things. You know, neither of them at this point in their careers is a particularly good pocket passer or evolved pocket passer. So when you look at stopping Cleveland, yes, you're right, Marv. You better stop the run. You better stop Isaiah Crowell. You better stop West. You better stop Tate. You better stop their ability to run that zone scheme. But additionally, if it's Manziel, you better have somebody assigned to him so that when he gets out of the pocket, he doesn't hurt you making plays just on his pure athleticism.
Well, we'll find out on Sunday on Sky Sports. We get the Cleveland Browns and the Cincinnati Bengals. It's our first game on Sunday. Jeff, let's talk about a couple of other sort of topics around the NFL. And I saw this week that Jay Gruden, the Washington Redskins head coach, said jobs are on the line in the last few weeks of the season. So, you know, the Redskins had another dispiriting loss, another loss at home. Didn't score a point against the St. Louis Rams. But I wanted to talk about, not necessarily about the Redskins, but there are going to be a few teams now, and Washington absolutely are one of them, going through a difficult final month of the season. And you've probably had this in college, in NFL Europe, up in Canada. How do you keep it together? And actually, you don't always keep it together, do you? Because some teams just have really bad ends to the year.
No, you don't. And the reality of it is, where it's different in college than it is in pro football. In college football, it's a game. And I've heard this said, and it's really true. College football is a game played by boys on Saturday. NFL football, pro football, Canadian Football League, whatever you're talking about, it's a war fought by men on Sundays.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing I'll take exception to Jay's comment is the reality of the job, Jay, is that guys are playing for jobs every week.
Yeah.
Not just when you're out of the playoff. Now, that may be a motivational tool or a message he's trying to send through the media to his football team. Hey, if you're thinking about packing it in,
yep,
then you'll be packing it out of here in the off season. But that's not lost on the players. They've been in the locker room. They've been in training camp. They've seen guys come and go. Guys get cut, put on waivers, all of those things.
Yeah.
They understand the business of the business. It is a high-performance industry. If you don't perform, they find somebody else to do it, whether you're looking to make a playoff run in the playoffs or not going to the playoffs, you still have to perform.
Do you change anything? And I guess this is one of those things that changes from team to team, the mood of the locker room. Do you get tougher with them? Do you lighten things up and say, right, we're all going bowling? Or do you just try and see it through to the end? Do you stick to the plan? How does it change?
In my experience with pro athletes, and that's 20-some years of coaching pro athletes, I think the thing that pro athletes want more than anything else, Neil, is consistency.
Right, yeah.
And they really look closely at how you respond to things. Because we, as coaches, we're always talking to them about, and I say it to my guys all the time, the one thing the game guarantees you is adversity.
Yep.
So we're going to face it. Now, it's how we respond to it that matters. Well, when you take that message to your players, then you have to embody that same consistency in your own performance, in your own character, in your own, psychology, if you will, when times get tough. If you're a guy that looks to point fingers and, blame people and cut people because you're not going good, well, again, they see that real fast, and you lose the trust of your locker room. So, again, if I was, and I'm not, but if I was, talking to Jay Gruden right now, I'd say, Jay, stay with what you believe in, stay with your core concepts. These players right now, more than anything else, what they need right now is leadership.
The leadership of the Oakland Raiders, Mark Davis, met with Jim Harbaugh on the sidelines before the game last week, a game that Oakland won 24-13, and really Derek Carr outplayed Colin Kaepernick. And apparently, reportedly, Mark Davis told Jim Harbaugh, "You stole our dysfunction," is what he said to the 49ers. Goes back to what we...
What do we got, lip readers?
Yeah, I know.
That somewhere somebody's got that. Somebody's got that conversation taped and they're trying to read lips.
So this made me think of my next question because
stole my dysfunction.
Yeah, they talk about Jim Harbaugh potentially becoming a Raiders head coach or a candidate for that. It seems increasingly likely that Jim Harbaugh's time in San Francisco is coming to an end. So here we go again with the final 3 weeks of the season. If you're a player, how do you react to, that coach is heading out the door? Or do you, again, does that where it comes back to, you are being paid, you are a professional, you take care of your business, or does it become a distraction?
Well, again, the way you want a player to respond to it is that, hey, I put my name on that contract, and that was for 16 weeks, not 14, and then we're out of it for the last two, so I'm just going to mail it in. I sign my name to that paper for 16 weeks. And the real pros do it that way. And the guys that don't do it that way, they're usually not around very long. The same thing's, though, true for the coaches. Now, I just think that all of this stuff swirling around the 49ers with, is he going to Michigan? Is he going to the Raiders? Can he get along with Jed York? Brian, Trent Baalke doesn't like him. It's the coaches against the players. It's all that drama is killing the 49ers. It's just, and it's so amazing because that's an organization of all the organizations going back to the Bill Walsh days. That organization was founded upon, 49er think, if for yeah, one of a better
doing
term.
It the right way,
doing it the right way, in-house. Keeping things in house, not airing your dirty laundry outside the locker room, and you know, really being a class organization. And it's really unfortunate to me personally to watch that whole circus go on out there in the Bay Area.
I watched Colin Kaepernick play very badly on Sunday night when I looked at that game against the Raiders. Clearly outplayed by Derek Carr, who was very good for the Raiders with 3 touchdown passes. And then I watched Kaepernick's on Monday morning. I watched his post-game press conference. And then I took to Twitter. I couldn't help it. I had to. And I do. I said it on Twitter. I think he's underachieving. I think he comes across as arrogant. I'm not a fan of his on or off the field at the moment. And I look back at the press conference he had in midweek last week, Jeff. I made a note of this. This came from Peter King of Sports Illustrated. Kaepernick was asked 32 questions. He answered in a total of 87 words. All right. Now, I think at some point, I know he doesn't like the celebrity, I'm the face of the franchise. Well, you are, whether you like it or not. You're a quarterback in the National Football League. And I think he comes across as aloof. I think he comes across as having no interest. You can tell he feels like those are situations when the media get after him. I think somebody in that 49ers organization needs to remind him that's your only chance to talk to the fans.
Well, yeah, it is. And you'd say that you don't want to be the face of the franchise. You don't want to be out there. Then why do I pick up a copy last year of GQ magazine and you're standing there with no shirt on and a pair of shoulder pads on the front of a national men's
yep.
magazine?
Yep.
So you want to be out there when it's good, but you don't want to face the music when it's bad. And again, you measure a man by his performance in the times of stress and struggle and adversity.
Mm.
And that's when you have the greatest opportunity to do the most good for your football team, for yourself, and for young people that are watching everything that you do and how you perform in those moments. And that's the sad thing about that to me. It's not sad. It's just the reality of the situation. He's not playing well, and he doesn't want to face the questions.
Mm.
But again, when you're not playing well, that's when you need to face the questions, just for coaches and players.
Well, the questions will still be asked.
They certainly will, and they're rightly asked because you are the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers in the National Football League. You are open for it's open season, bro. They don't need a license to come after you. You provide the license when you sign up for the job.
And I think back to when we were touring the country doing the fan nights with the Vikings guys and with Mark Brunell. And a big segment of that, the X's and O's stuff that you did, was looking at the read option and the running quarterbacks. And it was we all felt at the time, well, we might be on the verge of seeing a change in the NFL. Well, Cam Newton has struggled a lot of this year, Jeff. RG3 is sitting on the bench and Kaepernick has struggled. What's happened there?
But go back now. Let's go back in Birmingham and Manchester and Glasgow and all those places where we went.
Yep.
And this topic came up. And Mark Brunell, who should be, you know, at least in the Jaguars Hall of Fame, if not the Hall of Fame, maybe one of the top 3 left-handed quarterbacks ever to play in the National Football League, his comment about the play was, you need to throw
still
the ball
throw
from
it.
The pocket.
Still got to go
you
back there,
still
right?
got to take that 5-step drop and deliver from the pocket. And you know what? He's right. He's exactly right. Because you look at the shelf life of these guys. Now, they bring great athleticism to the game.
Mm.
But you just can't expose yourself to that many hits. The coordinators in the National Football League are so smart. The athletes can gather so much information, and the athletes are so much better than college football that, you know, again, you run the risk of putting your quarterback in danger, and you look at RG3.
Yeah, so we're not putting these guys on the scrap heap, but when you compare them to Aaron Rodgers and Andrew Luck and those kind of quarterbacks, Andrew Luck is a quarterback first, but if you need him to run and make a move, look at the touchdown he scored against Cleveland. Aaron Rodgers can do that and run out of the pocket. Maybe these 3 guys that we mentioned were incredible, you know, mind-blowing, wow athletes first, but they're more limited as quarterbacks.
Well, you know, when you look at those 3 guys, and the guy that to me that has this right now is transitioning into being the other kind of quarterback, if you will, is Cam.
Yeah.
Because they've pulled back some of that, you know, zone read stuff that they've asked him to do.
Running numbers are down for him a lot this year.
And now he's starting to throw the ball better. You looked at this performance the other night against New Orleans, and you say, that's pretty doggone good. Now, I'm not ready to, like you say, throw those guys on the scrap heap, but because I think Kaepernick's going through kind of one of those rough stretches that they all go through. RG3, I just don't know. You know, there's a lot more questions there to me. First of all, number one is his health. Number two is, you know, there's just, can he get along with anybody? I mean,
that is the key there, isn't it?
Yeah. And again, you know, it's the locker room in pro football is a lot different than the locker room was at Baylor.
All three of it's interesting you said, you know, they're not done because all three of these guys have played behind really bad offensive lines this year. I mean, as good as 49ers, normally you associate them with that. Kaepernick's the most sacked quarterback in the NFL. Cam's had new offensive tackles. RG3 was getting hit left, right, and center. So, again, it all comes back. It's all part of the deal, isn't it? It's part of the, you know, the bigger picture.
Yeah, it's all part of the whole thing. And again, just like the quarterback gets way too much credit sometimes and way too much criticism sometimes, I hear that about offensive lines giving up so many sacks. I want to look at the tape first because is it what they're asking him to do that's causing the problem? Is the quarterback holding the ball too long? Are the receivers not getting their hot reads or coming out of their breaks the way? I mean, it was interesting. I watched the Cowboy game on the play that Romo got hurt, right? They blame the offensive line. How can you let an A-gap rusher come right down the middle of the field and hit your quarterback? Well, that should never happen, but the Redskins were in a plus blitz situation where there was going to be a free rusher from somewhere.
So he should have seen it coming.
Well, he should have, not only should he have seen it coming, and he may have, but there was not a single hot route in the route that they were throwing. There was no place for him to go with the ball against zero coverage. And, you know, working for June Jones, who's one of the better offensive minds ever in this game, and, you know, coached great offenses in Houston and, you know, in Detroit, Atlanta, had Pro Bowl quarterbacks, all that. The first thing he says to quarterbacks is, know where you can go with the ball fast. And in that play design, the Cowboys didn't have a hot receiver against zero coverage. That's not the offensive line.
Yeah, I remember that play, and all you could see was Dez Bryant's back, Jason Witten's back, and they're racing away downfield.
They're running four verticals now. Yeah. Should Tony have just got it out of his hand? Maybe.
Yeah.
But, again, give the guy a chance.
Let's start, just have a quick look back at some of the games from Week 14. We talked about the Cleveland Browns, but Andrew Luck was struggling for much of the game. And then the first play of the drive, actually, go 11 plays, 90 yards. He gets sacked and almost fumbles the football. And I said to you, well, now he's on his own six-yard line. He's got to go 94 yards. And you said the dog pound's making all the noise. It wasn't quite the 1986 AFC Championship game with John Elway and the drive, but I tell you what, it reminded me a little bit of it. I mean, it was a big-time drive in the end. I know they got the pass interference penalty, but he had to convert a couple of third downs. But this is nothing new from Andrew Luck. I mean, he was unhappy after the game. He was angry at himself for the turnovers, but he delivered at the end when he needed to.
Well, and again, that's the measuring stick. Can you make the plays when you have to make the plays? And at the most critical moments, you know, at the critical moments when man measures man, as we say in coaching, he was able to stand up and make the plays. And not only that drive, but it's how he did it in that drive, Neil, that was so impressive to me. Because he converted at least two, maybe three, third and longs in that drive.
Yeah, it was.
Those are the hardest converts to make. And you know what? He kept battling. He was beat up. He had played poorly by his own admission. He had struggled mentally. He'd struggled physically. He was at the dog pound end of the field. All of the indicators to say he should fold it up and let's go on to next week were right there. But that's one of the reasons he's one of the great quarterbacks in this league in his third year in the league.
Yeah. Diving catch by Dante Moncrief was one of those third down conversions. A full-on blitz from the Browns, and Andrew throws it over the middle to Kobe Fleener for another first down. So he did really step up. Seattle's defense. They're back. They're back, right?
They're back. They got their swagger back, and I'm going to tell you something.
It's as much that, isn't it, as the X's nose. It's their attitude. They have that.
Yeah, which you didn't see in the first few games of the year, you know. And everybody talks about Bobby Wagner being back, and I'm sure he brought a lot back to him.
Yep.
But you know what? They weathered the storm of winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Right? And that people will never understand how difficult it is after you've won the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody wants to take a bow. Everybody's trying to get your players in free agency. All the distractions become multiplied. Here come the commercial endorsements. Here come all of the things that take your focus away from football. And they looked like a team that wasn't particularly well focused coming out of training camp, but have found that and have found the ability to refocus during this season. And they're playing their best football right now, which is when you want to play your best football in December and January.
Richard Sherman hasn't given up a catch in three games. I read that yesterday. That's an incredible statistic on its own. We know about Earl Thomas and the range, Cam Chancellor. Byron Maxwell was the guy that stepped up last year and became the starter, making Brandon Browner expendable, and he ends up in New England. But they just gone and found another one, Jeff. Tharald Simon. What, another big...
You know, a big kid out of LSU, 6'3", 210-pound corner out of LSU. And, you know, Tharald Simon as a college player wasn't a guy that you went, oh, wow, there's a guy, right? I mean, they get this guy in the fifth round. This is what I give the Seahawks so much credit for. They know what they want.
Mm.
They know the profile of the guy that's playing a specific position for them.
Yep.
They want long corners, so they go find them. And, you know, it was interesting in the game we were watching the other day. They were talking about a secondary in the NFL didn't have 1 6-foot DB.
Yeah.
That's amazing. In Seattle, if they walked into the locker room, you'd think it was a basketball team coming to play with those corners. They're all long, lean, great, you know, wingspan. It's not just how tall you are, it's how long your arms are. So sometimes, like I say, Simon is not a particularly fluid guy. He's not a particularly quick-footed guy. He doesn't turn as good as most DBs do. But when you have that kind of length and arm span, you can actually play underneath where most DBs aren't comfortable because your arms just reach up and get the ball.
I guess we'll see that a little bit more now. We did a Detroit game on Sky Sports a couple of weeks ago, and I was digging into their roster and looking at their secondary. Of course, Detroit are in the NFC North, where you've got Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey, Jordy Nelson. Six of their eight defensive backs are 6 foot or above.
You got to match up. Yeah. You have to match up. And if you're playing Jordy Nelson two times a year, and those are, you know, you think about that, that's 4 points towards your championship.
Yep.
You better have a corner or corners who can match up with those guys. Brandon Marshall. And, you know, Alshon Jeffrey's not a midget.
No.
So, you know, there's...
Steady there, Marvin Lewis.
You better have some corners who can handle those matchups, and you better have a slot corner who can, you know, go in there and play against a little, you know, speed guy.
Yep.
And you better have a dime that can go match up with, you know, Martellus Bennett, who's 6'7" at tight end. I mean, that's what it takes today in the National Football League. It's about matchups.
Anyone else catch your eye in week 14 before we move on to week 15, Jeff? Anything else?
Well, you know, from a positive standpoint, you know, I know I've tweeted this out numbers of times, and it's interesting. I got a tweet back from his daughter, actually. What Bruce Arians is doing in Arizona is beyond description to me. Because I listen to all of these coaches and they talk about, well, we lost our starting quarterback. Well, think about my man out there in the Cactus.
Yeah.
He's on his third guy.
Yep.
Right? And that third guy's been cut by, I think, about five different teams in this league. So
he's lost running backs, defensive players, Larry Fitz for a little while.
That's like death row out there, man. You don't know who's going to go next, right?
And they're ugly to watch, though. I mean, I challenge anyone. Sit and watch an Arizona Cardinals game.
I'm going to tell you something.
But they win.
You think that's ugly? Go to Cleveland.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Go to Washington.
Right.
Where you're losing, right? Where you lose a game. Whether you lose by one or close like Cleveland, or you lose by a bunch like Washington did, losing sucks. I'm just telling you. We call losing the land of suck, right? So you want to win. You play to win the game. Isn't that what Herm said?
Herm
you
said
play
it.
To win the game.
Yeah.
And I don't care how you win. Just win, baby. And somehow he's got this team to 10 wins. And for my money, he's the coach of the year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Let's move on to week 15 then, and we'll do our picks. Another good week last week. Both went 11-5, Jeff.
So that's why you wear those nice sweaters like that, Neil.
Is that what it is? Because I'm going to the bookies. let's move on then, quickly, swiftly. We'll start with the Thursday night game, the Arizona Cardinals you mentioned. This is no gimme. They're on the road at the St. Louis Rams.
No, not a gimme at all, because the St. Louis Rams have done shut a team out 2 weeks in a row for the first time, and you had the stat, what, it was 1970-something?
That was the first back-to-back Rams shutout since 1945.
Since 1945, yeah. I'm corrected, and you know, that's that's even more impressive. But again, I'm gonna go against myself here, and I'm gonna give the Rams the nod just because it's at home.
I'm with you. I'm gonna go because I think there's not actually. I have concerns.
St. Louis is a little better than people think they are.
Yeah, they are. I mean, that defense is good. They get some big plays out of special teams as well.
And they have Sean Hill from
NFL Europe.
Absolutely.
Still some of those guys knocking around. That's what we like to see. Let's move on to Sunday, December the 14th then. And we'll start with Pittsburgh at Atlanta. Now, Atlanta are much better at home. Pittsburgh got another big day from Le'Veon Bell. So it's, you know,
Atlanta's much better than what at home?
Much better than they are on the road. It's all relative, Jeff. I'm trying to find a positive. Last night, I give them credit
because they fought back last
yeah,
night.
Yeah, I was going to say it was a fight back.
Yeah, and they really did. But defensively, they're still struggling in Atlanta. And, you know, Pittsburgh... Le'Veon Bell, man, oh man, what a game! And not just one game; he's done it a number of times. Yep. I think that that offensive line, which has always been or lately been a real problem for Pittsburgh, is starting to solidify a little bit. Kelvin Beachum, who we had at SMU, is playing for him now and doing a good job. And Roethlisberger has better weapons outside.
Oh yeah, it's good.
So I'm going to take Pittsburgh.
I'm going to take Pittsburgh as well. I would just love to see, and I'd hope to think they could find it now in the final month of the year, given their pedigree and their experience, find some consistency because they're tough to work out. This team,
yeah, they are. And you know, the thing that concerns me is like we were doing the Red Zone, which I think is a fabulous addition to our show at Sky, the Red Zone, and you saw Ike Taylor get roasted on that one deep ball. Yeah. They've got to stop giving up big plays, which has kind of never been their
thing. They did that against New Orleans.
Yeah, they've always played well in the back end, forcing the ball down, making you work to score if you're going to score. But they're starting to give up some big plays, and I think LeBeau's got to get that corrected.
Jacksonville, Baltimore, we've both got on record as saying we like Gus Bradley and we like what he's trying to do there, but you need the horses, right? You need the horses.
He's not there yet with his people. But again, he's put them in a position. It won 2 weeks ago, and we're in position to win last week, which is, again, positive signs. And I know when you're in Jacksonville's situation, because I've been through some of those, you're always looking for positive ways to sell what you're cooking in the kitchen.
Yep.
And, you know, that was a good one for Gus, but this is a tall order for them. I'm going to go Baltimore.
Yeah, I'm Baltimore as well with that one. The Green Bay Packers at the Buffalo Bills. So Buffalo halted Peyton Manning's streak of touchdown passes in a game at 51. They have got a good defense. They have a strong pass rush, and I think they sort of kept Denver relatively in check, as much as you can keep Denver in check. But I can't see any way. I can't see them holding Green Bay under 21 points. And the Buffalo get to 21 points. That's the problem with this Bills team, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, again, normally at this time of year, anytime anybody goes into Buffalo, you say, well, Buffalo gets the edge because of the weather. Well, this is like going south, I think, for Green Bay to
going
go into
on vacation.
Buffalo.
Take their Bermuda shorts.
Flip-flops on the sideline. But I'm going to give Green Bay the edge. I think Green Bay just a better football team. And I agree with you, Neil. Buffalo's defense, particularly that front seven that they have, might be as good as anybody, certainly in their division. It's just a shame that they just don't have they're putting the weapons together yet on offense. They got a little problem at guard, and and Orton is Orton. But, Buffalo's trending in the right direction. I just hope that, I hope that the coach gets enough time with the new ownership and all the regime change that's coming because, Coach Marone is from
NFL Europe, London Monarchs.
Another guy.
London Monarchs, he certainly was. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Carolina Panthers. All of a sudden, Carolina are half a game back from the Saints and the Falcons. could sneak in and repeat as division champions. They really could. I am going to take Carolina because this game's at home. They've been, you know, a long time waiting for that win, but the win was impressive last week. There's no getting away from that.
No, because where it occurred, right? It was a divisional game on the road, right? A divisional win on the road. Those are huge for you. And so now they get this one. They're going to be hanging around, I'm afraid, till that bitter end. And good for Riverboat Ron. You know, they could have packed it in early because it's been a seriously disappointing year for them after the great year they had last year.
It's going to be an interesting little run-in in the NFC South because they sort of all play, not each other, but Carolina have still got to play Tampa Bay, Cleveland, and then at Atlanta. New Orleans go at Chicago, home to Atlanta and home to Tampa Bay. And Atlanta have got Pittsburgh at New Orleans, and then home to Carolina. So it's all going to...
Well, when you look at that, certainly I would say that Carolina has the best closeout schedule, right? They've got Tampa Bay, they've got Cleveland at home, and then they go to Atlanta, and that will probably be for the championship.
Yeah, interesting to see what happens there. I'm going Carolina, you've gone Carolina in that one, Jeff. So our first game on Sunday on Sky Sports, we're back in the dog pound. It's Cincinnati at Cleveland. It's tough to call at the moment when we're recording this. We don't know who's playing quarterback for the Browns. The Bengals are so inconsistent. They did win three on the road, then went back home for the first time in a month and lost. Now they're back on the road. I'm probably going to take the Bengals at the moment.
Well,
Cleveland play with so much passion.
Yeah, you know what? And they do. And I'm just a little concerned because I think the Barnum and Bailey Circus left town last week in Cleveland, and they may have left somebody behind because Marvin said they're playing a midget at quarterback. So I know Johnny Manziel's 5'11", and that's not a midget. So they got a secret weapon out there in Cleveland, so watch out.
So you're going Cleveland?
I'm
going
to go Cleveland.
Actually, I'm thinking now, I was going to go Cincinnati. I don't think Andy Dalton can let him do what he did, because Cleveland absolutely dominated him a few weeks back. I'm going to stick with Cincinnati just to give us some differences there.
Remember, the short guys out there looming.
They are. Minnesota at Detroit. I think Detroit's in a nice little run of games where they can get a little bit healthy. They lost a couple, and then they've got Chicago, and then they last week they beat Tampa Bay. Now they get Minnesota, who are competitive, but I think... in Detroit, I'm going to go Detroit. What about you?
Yeah, you know what? This is one. Glenn Shield, who does all our stats for our broadcast at Sky, is next. He and I may be the only Lions fans on the island. If I can come up with any else, call us and let us know. But I think Detroit is a good football team, and I think Detroit, if they can get healthy, there's a few nicks they got that they need to get.
Well, Megatron's healthy now.
That's a big plus for them. And if they can stay healthy down the stretch, I don't think they're going to win the division, but I think they can be a wild card team. And if they get in, watch out, because they're good enough to beat a lot of teams in this league. So I'm going to take Detroit.
All right, both going Detroit in that game. Houston at Indianapolis. This is the last chance for Houston to keep pace, really, in the South. I think the Colts will win this game, and I think my only worry was I look at that Colts team, and I don't see a Super Bowl offensive line. Their quarterback just gets under too much pressure, and I'm thinking J.J. Watt against that offensive line might be a problem. I'm going to pick the Colts, but the offensive line. Did you think it was a concern when you watched them on Sunday?
Well, yeah, because I thought that too many times Luck was under duress. He was throwing, you know. We always talk about protect the spot. You want to keep the quarterback on his feet, but keep him on his spot. Too many times he was having to move off his spot. And again, I don't think that the center, who's a young kid that made it as a free agent, and he's a great story, but you just watch him play and you look at him and say, you got to be better than that. And so I think that's a concern for Indianapolis going down the stretch, but I think they'll be good enough at home to beat Houston.
All right, both going Indianapolis Colts. Just the one difference so far. Cincinnati and Cleveland, that game could loom big. The Oakland Raiders at the Kansas City Chiefs. Chance for the Chiefs to get revenge from a couple of weeks ago. Raiders won two out of their last three now, Jeff.
Hottest team in football right now. I
like what I see from Derek Carr.
Derek Carr, you know, and I tweeted this out to a lot of Raider fans that I stay in contact with on Twitter. And the thing that's good to see is I think the Raiders have finally found their quarterback. Mm. After all these years of frustration and really, you know, going through so many guys, they looks like they finally found a guy, and that's good for the organization. I would love to say that, you know, they can sweep Kansas City in the, you know, on the series this year, but that's an awful tall order because, you know, Kansas City and Oakland is an intense rival game. Kansas City got beat last week.
Yep.
So I think they'll bounce back at home against the Raiders.
All right, we're both going Chiefs, Jeff, but I want to just throw this out there. It's been more than a calendar year since a wide receiver scored a touchdown for the Chiefs. We're sat in the Sky Sports studios on Sunday. We're watching the main game, Seattle and Philadelphia, but we've got Red Zone on our monitor as well. And you could not believe that with less than 30 seconds left on the clock, the Chiefs couldn't stretch the field. They were throwing little screen passes, and then they tried a wide receiver screen. I mean, they just don't have enough on the outside, do they?
You know, Neil, that was a great point you brought up where I was sitting there watching the game. That's why it's so much fun to sit and watch the games with you, because you understand the game, right? And I appreciate that. And, you know, you just wonder why with 30 seconds left to go on the clock and you got to go 70 or 80, you're throwing balls outside, hitches and screens outside to your wide receivers. Where is the vertical passing game? I know that's not what they, quote, do.
Right.
That's a serious liability in that offense. Now, you can say, well, just hand the ball to Charles because he'll get you all the 70-yarders you want, but
not when the game's on the line
at the end.
Not when the
game's on the line at the end and you got to do it. And certainly not when you get to the playoffs, because you've got to be able to throw the football down the field to ultimately win games in the National Football League.
That's interesting, the point you raise there, because you know, they like to run a lot of those crossing routes and they spread you out that. You know,
it's the West Coast offense, Andy's been with, you know, since he was with Holmgren in Green Bay.
But that means
years
you can't
ago.
Get yourself into a situation late in a game where you're chasing a game, and that limits you then.
Well, it certainly does, and it limits you in your ability to make explosive plays.
Yeah.
You know, when people stack the box and they're going to put eight in there because they know Charles is the one weapon that you have.
Let's move on to our next game. Then we've both gone Kansas City there. Miami at New England.
I don't, this is a tough one for you right now.
No, it's not. It's New England.
you know what? There's that pervading sense of doom about all you Ben
I got fans. A little bit excited when I thought Flacco had fumbled last week because we were watching that.
A little bit.
Studio.
You almost fell out of your chair.
And then I was like, I had a horrible feeling it was going to come back, and it did. They ruled
See,
it in.
You
got to
be positive, man. When you started saying it's coming back, before they even...
That was it, yeah. I've got to learn to treat the highs and lows the same, right?
That's right.
And I'm not doing it.
It's all about your expectations, man.
Exactly. I've got low ones. That's why I'm going New England.
New England, again, showed by traveling all the way west, and I know they went early, but that is a tough travel to go from Boston to San Diego to play a game. And they showed, you know, San Diego jumps on them early, they weather the storm, they come back, and they win the football game. And again, they're not playing, they didn't play lights out, but I certainly think when they get home in the snow, in the cold, South Florida team coming north.
Yes.
Go New England.
You've sold me. New England, yeah. Washington at the New York Giants. And I think this is a Giants game. You highlighted on Sky, obviously we know about Odell Beckham, but Andre Williams as well. There are some young players that can emerge for this team.
There's some reasons for hope for Giant fans, you know, particularly offensively. Now, they don't have Victor Cruz. But, you know, think about what they're going to have when they have the running back like they've got, and they've got the young receiver like they've got, and then you factor Victor Cruz back in. And, you know, it's not without hope in New York. It's just that they're, you know, they've got crippled by injuries.
Yep.
Their defense isn't playing well enough. And, you know, it's just one of those tough stretches that they're going through. I'm a big Tom Coughlin fan. I hope Tom coaches at New York until he decides he doesn't want to anymore. But again, it's just they're not a terrible football team, and particularly when they're at home, I think they'll win.
Our second game, so we're both going Giants in that one. Our second game on Sky Sports on Sunday is Denver at San Diego. San Diego is still in the hunt for a wild card spot. This is their last chance to try and haul Denver back and take the division. I guess you give San Diego more of a chance because they're at home. You look at Peyton threw some funny-looking passes last week that got picked off, but he's still Peyton Manning. So where do you see this one playing out, and how did you see it playing
out? I'm going to tell you a little story. When I was coordinating against Doug, when Doug was in Toronto, Flutie I'm talking about.
Yep.
We beat them. They were a really, really good football team. We beat them, and Doug may have had his worst game as a pro. I think he threw for like 240 yards and two interceptions and one touchdown. And I got a call from Jack Bicknell, who coached Doug at Boston College, but was also my coach at Maine. And he said, "Jeff, what are you doing?" And I said, "What are you talking about, Jack?" I was all fired up because we played so well on defense. He said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, yeah, we blitzed him. We mixed some zone coverage in there. We had him guess." He said, "You don't realize what you've done. You know what's going to happen the next time you play him." I said, "What?" And he goes, "He's going to drill you." And they scored 50 on us the next time we played. So
you don't want to make him mad.
Peyton didn't throw a touchdown pass last week. Watch out, San Diego. Here it comes.
Here comes five of them at least. Yeah. Both going Denver in that game then. The New York Jets at the Tennessee Titans. Did see some fight from the Jets last week. That's going to make me pick the Jets to win. I can't believe I'm picking the Jets 2 weeks in a row. I don't know what's up. I think it's sleep deprivation. I can't believe I'm doing it. But I'm going Jets because I just think Tennessee could not be one of the more nondescript teams in the NFL.
Let's talk. I want to talk about this because this is important to me. When you look at a football team that's struggling, and the Jets are 2-11,
yeah,
right, and you look for signs that football team has given up, that they've quit, that it's over with,
yeah,
right?
What we talked about earlier in the
absolutely
podcast.
And what I see when I look at the Jets is I see a team that still fights,
yep,
to win, not tries to win. Fights to win.
Well, let me give you an example there, Jeff. That play to Jarius Wright that was the touchdown. Now, you can say all you like, well, the Jets shouldn't have been, you don't give that up, 87 yards on a wide receiver screen to lose the game. But I did notice that sprinting 60 yards downfield, Sheldon Richardson.
I was going to make the exact same point.
Yeah.
When your top players are emptying their bucket like Sheldon Richardson was,
yep,
on that last play of the game, that tells me you still have the locker room.
Yep.
That tells me you still have your football team. And I truly believe Rex still has his football team. The sad thing about it is he doesn't have the tools.
Yeah. Yep.
Their secondary is not good enough. They're not good enough at quarterback. They're not good enough yet at receiver. But he's got a team that competes and fights every day to get better. If I'm Woody Johnson and team, I'm going to keep that guy.
Right.
And I'm going to find out why.
What I can give him.
Yeah.
What do you need?
Give me that guy,
yeah,
and then let me give him the weapons. Because once, if they fight like that when they're 2-11, imagine what they're going to be like when they get better.
Because if they take that guy out of the equation, he's still the new person. You can't overhaul a roster in 1 year. He's still going to have those people,
and
maybe you don't have the motivation.
Exactly, and you can't coalesce. That's a good word for you. You can't coalesce a locker room.
No.
In one off season. So you're going to take a major step back. Now, if Rex had lost his football team, or the indications were there that they'd lost the football team, and there was all kinds of stuff going on, and the players weren't playing hard, and
yep,
Sheldon Richardson is diving 35 yards down the field in overtime trying to give his team a chance to win the football game.
You going Jets?
I'm going Jets.
I'm going Jets as well. I can't believe I've not only just picked the Jets, I've campaigned for Rex Ryan's. I need to go for a lie down after this. San Francisco.
They're going to take your Dolphin fan club card away.
Yeah, they are. I've always been a Rex Ryan fan, though.
Yeah,
I like the way he coaches.
Need more guys like him in the league.
Yeah. San Francisco at Seattle, then. This could be low scoring, but
San Francisco, Seattle, this was one that early in the year everybody was going, hey, man, oh, man, oh,
yeah,
man, is that going to be a football game, right? Now I'm not so sure,
mm,
because Seattle has been so, I don't want to use the term inept, but they've been so bad on offense, so listless on offense lately, and they're going up into Seattle to face a defense that's playing as well as they've played in 2 years. Mm. It doesn't look good for the 49ers to me. Now, I know that they'll show up and you know, they'll come to play because they're certainly going to be embarrassed after what happened to them in the Battle of the Bay last week. But I just think that the 12s are going to get them up in Seattle.
Yeah, I'm going to go Seattle as well. The last time they played, we've seen a lot of quarterbacks shy away from attacking Richard Sherman. Kaepernick didn't. He went after him and he got picked off and he had another couple knockdowns. So I think the Seahawks would actually enjoy heaping some misery on the 49ers. That's the way this rivalry is.
This rivalry goes back a long way.
Not even in the NFL.
And that's right. The college football.
Dallas at Philadelphia, big game on
Sunday
night.
Huge. Whoa, man. Now we're back to the NFC East the way the NFC East used to be. This was when I talked to Coach Vermeil. I said, you know, when you're in Philadelphia, what team was your biggest rival? And I thought I'd hear New York or Washington, which is an hour and a half
close,
away,
yeah.
You know, because of proximity and all that stuff. He said, we hated the Cowboys. Right? Hated the Cowboys. And isn't it interesting that now, here we go, 30 years later, it's back to being that kind of rivalry again.
Fantastic. Philadelphia were sort of hampered offensively last week, and it's a different deal when they face the Dallas Cowboys defense. I guess Dallas, it's DeMarco Murray, isn't it? You ride him as much as you can.
You better. Yeah. You better. And you better throw the ball to Bees. Mm. Throw the ball to number 11, will you please? Get that kid the ball, because he's a player.
I'm going to go Philadelphia to bounce back at home.
You know what? I think in Philadelphia, it's a tall order for the Cowboys, and I think that the only thing I'm not sure about is, you know, I'm just not sold on their ability to throw the ball. Mm. If the Cowboys can stop Shady McCoy, then I think the Cowboys win, but I just don't see that happening.
So that sounds like Philadelphia.
Philadelphia.
You just didn't want to say it.
Philadelphia.
Last one then, New Orleans at Chicago.
Woo!
This is a tough one to call, this one.
This is a tough one for me. Because
no Brandon Marshall for the Bears, of course, to factor in. He's out for the rest of the season.
I got friends on opposite
both sides,
on opposite sides of this one. And, you know, Rob Ryan is a close friend of mine, and I'm really pulling hard for him because the defense is just, for whatever reason, they're not playing very good defense.
If it's cold in Chicago, and I assume it will be, it's mid-December, at least Tressman and Rob Ryan will have got off a really warm seat before they play.
You know, and I they're both under pressure, but living under pressure is living in the National Football League. Coach Tress, on the other hand, there was a report that surfaced last week that he's going to make a change of defensive coordinator after the season. Mm. I think it's important for him that they finish well, that they win some down the stretch. You know, I think they're, 5-9 right now and have really underachieved. I think what is important for Chicago also is that Cutler shows some signs of life. And, so I'm going to take Chicago in this one.
I'm going to take Chicago as well. And I think Matt Forte can be the key because there's been lots of players that are running all over the New Orleans Saints. Let's get to some questions in the mailbag, Jeff. Try and get 3 or 4 of these in before we wrap up Inside the Huddle this week. This was a good one from Daniel Brooks. I know you saw this one on Twitter earlier in the week. He said, how can teams set the first 15 plays when they don't know situations, down and distance? And I guess not all teams do 15, but there is maybe a general script in a place.
Do we know where Dan's from?
I don't know.
You know
from
what?
Twitter.
From Twitter. But I'm going to tell you something. That question is indicative of the thing that you and I always talk about, how the fans in the U.K. have grown so much in terms of their appreciation for the game and their knowledge of the game. Because 3 years ago, you'd have never got that question. Mm-hmm. So that's a very good technical question. And here's really what happens. You script your first 15, but you always leave caveats in there for down and distance situations. So, for example, your third play is a draw. Well, that may fit with that down and distance, but you have an alternative play if it doesn't. So, for example, if it's 3rd and 1 and you got draw on as your third play, you won't run draw there. You'll have basically a trump card that you can pull out, which would be your short yardage offense or whatever. And then you'll go through it. So it's generally the first 15 if the game flows the way you think it's going to flow. If not, you always have the ability to abort the script and go to what you need.
Are those 15 plays your best 15 plays, or are they the plays that you feel will get them in and maybe set something up later? And what's the reason for it? Is it so you can practice those plays in the week?
Well, it's twofold. You want to go, you always on your last day, you're going to practice your first 15 so that the players can go out and they know. Again, so much of winning is having the players really buying in and believing in what they're doing and knowing what's coming, right? Players don't like surprises. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you pull a play out that you haven't practiced all week. That doesn't create a lot of confidence in the huddle. So they know why you're doing what you're doing, and they know what it is that you want. Now, additionally, from a coach's standpoint, you script that first 15 where you might use multiple formations, personnel groups, or motions to see what the other team's adjustment to those things are going to be. So, for example, you go with two tight ends and they leave their base defense on the field, you file that away for later in the game when you may need to run the football. You go to four wide receivers and they go to dime and blitz you, then you file that away because you'll want that information later as you call in the second half and later in the first half.
All right, good question there from Daniel
Fantastic
Brooks.
Fantastic question.
Yeah, good question. This one we kind of touched on Rob Ryan a little bit, but it comes from Paul Holland, who says, is Sean Payton on the hot seat in New Orleans, or would Rob Ryan be the fall guy? This is an interesting one. Generally, you could widen it out because often it's, you know, is it the head coach who takes the fall? Sometimes it is, and then all the coordinators go as well. Or do you think sometimes the coach stays, but he has to fire some of the people that work for him?
Well, I think when you're a head coach like Sean Payton, who's won a Super Bowl, and been
more wiggle
in the playoffs, you get a little bit more rope. Now, when you're a coordinator, it doesn't work that way. You know, again, people seem to have lost the fact that last year Rob went into New Orleans and fixed the worst defense in the National Football League. They had just an unbelievable turnaround. Well, for whatever reason, and I haven't frankly watched him enough or talked to him enough to get a sense of what has happened, but they've slid now, and they're struggling to stop anybody. So usually in cases like that, if there's going to be a change, it's going to be on the coordinator standpoint than on the head coach standpoint.
One thing I would add to that is they're not always lighting it up offensively. They did the week before against Pittsburgh, but there was no offense against Carolina. That's Sean Payton's gig, is offensive football. Drew Brees has been careless with the ball this year.
Yeah, you know, and it's very rarely, very, very rarely is it just one thing or one person or one side of the ball. But the reality of it is, you know, it's just like in business. If your department's not showing a profit, then they're going to find somebody else to run the department.
This one from, let's have a look here. Joe Helder Loxley, who says, who's the worst team in the NFL right now? So we're looking down at, the teams with the worst records are Tampa Bay at 2-11, Oakland now at 2-11, Tennessee at 2-11, and Jacksonville at 2-11. Oh, and the Jets at 2-11. Is that where we're out of those?
Yeah, I think you're looking at those, that cast of characters, and you know, for my money,
might be able to throw the Redskins in that group as well.
Right
the
now,
moment.
They're down there too.
Yeah.
For my money, you know, again, because of the injuries that now Mettenberger's out of the, I got to say Tennessee might be struggling worse than anybody right now. But if you're living in the land of suck where all those guys are, nobody's having a very good day.
I'd probably say Tennessee as well right now. I think Oakland have shown something in the last 3 weeks, at least some fight, and they've got the quarterback as well. I think Jacksonville would beat Tennessee more often than not. Probably should have had the last game they met in. Jacksonville and Tennessee play on Thursday nights on December the 18th. So everybody, you should tune in and watch it because it's on Sky Sports. That's one of the few where I'm glad we're not in the studio, Jeff. I'm just going to put it out there. Hopefully their bosses aren't listening. One last question then. Would a change in team improve Robert Griffin III and get his career on track? That comes from Alex Burton. I saw a thing this week, I can't remember which GM it was. It might have been Bill Polian or Ron Wolf. I can't remember which one it was, but they said that RG3 going to Washington, where first of all he was treated like a superstar, and by the owner as well, and then all of the attention that might have been the worst thing for him. Would a fresh start somewhere else, or would all those problems still be there that are mechanical?
Well, I think there's some things that are at play here that you know, some of it we don't know. First of all, how healthy is he?
Yep.
You know, you're talking about a guy who's had now multiple knee injuries, and his legs are a big part of his success, always have been. He had an operation in college. He's had one or two now in the National Football League. So that's my first concern about him. The second concern you have about him, he's going to have to go to an offense that suits him, suits his talents, and plays to his talents. And then I agree with if it was Mr. Polian or whoever, Ron Wolf or whoever said so, that was maybe as bad a situation as he could go into, because he was, you know, Bill Parcells told Tony Romo one time, don't be a Hollywood quarterback.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard not to be a Hollywood quarterback when you're shoved out there. Mm. And again, that's been one of the challenges in Washington is that, you know, they have to understand from as an organization what it takes to win. And sometimes what it takes to win is just go to work.
Yeah.
Just do your work. And then once you succeed, let the accolades come.
The accolades will be coming for this podcast, Jeff. It's been an absolute cracker.
It's awesome, man. As always, it's fun to be here. And what a great time on Sky the other day. I look forward to these week's games. We got some great ones again this week. So I hope the fans will join us.
Yeah, make sure you join us on Sunday. Thanks, Jeff, for this week. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. We'll be back next week to talk about all the big issues around the NFL. And in the meantime, we'll see you all 5:30 p.m. on Sky Sports on Sunday. Until then, bye for now. Bye-bye.